The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. It's my pleasure to be joined on the program today by TJ Newman. She's got a new book out. It's called Falling. She joins us on the telephone in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Vic. The pleasure is all mine.
You must be pretty darned excited. You've got your first book coming out, and this has been quite a process, hasn't it?
It really has been. It has been an absolute whirlwind in the best of ways. It's surreal, and I feel like I say that word far too often, but I really don't know how to describe it otherwise. It's been a surreal, incredible experience.
And this is a book where one of your previous occupations clearly helped you write a better book. Do you want to talk about what you did before you became a published author?
Sure. My job before this was as a flight attendant. I flew for Virgin America and Alaska Airlines for 10 years, and it was at work during a flight that I had the idea for my book, Falling, and it was actually at work also that I wrote much of the book. I worked primarily in first class, and so I had a forward galley to myself, and I'm also a night owl, so I worked a lot of red eyes. And so once I got the passengers, you know, taken care of and asleep, I went to work. A good use of the downtime that you have while the passengers don't need anything.
All right. Now, I'm going to be very careful. I'm going to tiptoe through this because there's so much that I'm sure you would prefer I do not give away. What can you tell us about the story?
Sure. I will tiptoe as well because it's one of those books where just a couple pages in, you already got spoiler alert. So I'll give you the premise, which is my book, Falling, is a book that tells the story of Coastal Airways Flight 416. And what the passengers on board this flight don't know is that just before takeoff, the family of their pilot has been kidnapped. And he has been told that if he doesn't crash the plane, they will be killed. So then the book follows the valiant efforts of the crew and the passengers in the air and the FBI and the family on the ground in their attempt to do the impossible.
And so we have this high altitude drama going on, and you pivot back and forth between the scene on the ground and the scene in the plane, and you've got all these characters that you introduce us to, and the flight attendants, of course, being a former flight attendant, they are crucial members of this story. Do you want to talk about them at all?
Yeah, I'd love to. The flight crew, their names are Joe, Kelly, and Big Daddy, as he is called. They're wonderful. They're the flight attendants. In my opinion, they're the hidden engine of this book. And what I love about the reception that I'm getting to the flight attendants in particular is that a lot of people are reading this book and saying, this has changed the way I look at flight attendants. I had no idea you guys had that much training, you had that much responsibility, that you were that capable. There's a common misconception that flight attendants are on board solely for service, that we're just there to bring you a drink. Mm. And I assure you, if we were only on board to bring you a drink, they would have replaced us with vending machines a long time ago. Flight attendants are on board an aircraft for safety and security and to be medical first responders for the passengers, period. And so it's been really nice to like I said, feel and hear the reception to that sort of different, you know, a counter narrative to the way flight attendants are typically sort of viewed and portrayed. And so it's been really nice to get that response.
Yes, it's got to be one of the most difficult, challenging jobs anywhere. And I'm old enough to remember a best-selling book called Coffee, Tea, or Me that really portrayed flight attendants as kind of airheads and bimbos. And I'm glad that you're showing us what it's really like, because when I get on a plane, I always check out the flight attendants and think, man, what a stressful job. You've got all these needy people, all these people that are making all these demands. It would drive me crazy. I'd last 5 seconds.
It definitely takes a certain kind of personality type, and patience is a non-negotiable trait that you must have to be a flight attendant. But it's a great job too. It's just oftentimes, and you know, it's funny, like you said, when you get on a plane, you're looking at the flight attendants, and it's such a typical response. You know, people will not look at the flight attendants and not think about it, not, you know, consider them, like I said, just someone who's going to bring them a drink. But I'll tell you what, the second we hit turbulence, the second something seems to be, you know, off, all eyes turn to the flight attendant.
Well, it's really kind of surreal, like you say. It's bizarre to be flying along in this tube so far above the earth and to just be kind of nonchalantly filing your Instagram post and eating snacks and watching a movie. It's just, we try not to think about the situation that we're really in. But when you read a book like this, and I'm thinking that there's going to be a lot of copies of this available in those airport bookstores. If I was reading this on a plane, I would probably stop reading it and just set it aside and say, I'm reading this on the ground.
You know, I've actually had several people say, oddly enough, this book made me less afraid of flying.
Oh,
because
okay.
I think, yeah, a lot of people think, you know, we're up or we're down, and there's really not any options besides that. And it that, you know, can get scary. But I think this book also shows that you have a lot more power than you think. There's a lot more that you can do, and a lot you're far more active in this environment than I think a lot of people realize. And a fear of flying really, to me, is a fear of a loss of control, because that's what you do. When you get on a plane, you really cede control to the pilots, to, you know, they literally have your life in their hands. And that was the spark for where I came up with the concept for this book and why I started writing this book. I was working a flight from Los Angeles to New York. It was red eye. Like I said, I'm a night owl. That's my route. And I was standing at the front of the aircraft, looking out into the cabin at the passengers who were all asleep. It's dark, it's cold, it's quiet. And I have this thought that their lives, my life, the lives of my crewmates, were all in the hands, like I said, of the pilots. But it was the first time that the flip side of that came to mind, which is the idea that with that much power and responsibility, how vulnerable does that make a commercial pilot? And I just couldn't shake the thought. And so several days later, I was working a different trip, and I just said to the captain I was flying with one day, hey, you know, what would you do if your family was kidnapped and you were told that if you didn't crash the plane, they would be killed? What would you do? And Vic, the look on his face, it terrified me, because I could tell he did not have an answer, and I could tell that terrified him. And that was the moment in which I knew I had a book to write.
You struck a nerve. My guest is T.J. Newman. We're talking about her novel, Falling. She joined us on the phone in Phoenix. T.J., as I read the book, I admired the flight crew tremendously, the flight attendants, and these pilots. They're just amazing what they do. It's just inconceivable to me. But it also was kind of a surprise, because I just assumed, having never watched a commercial pilot flying a plane, that they were just constantly looking out the window and checking this and checking that and blah, blah, blah. Well, these guys, one of them starts reading a book and the other guy starts fiddling around with something. And I was like, well, how do they do that?
You know, I think that's actually, I hear what you're saying, but it's actually the safest option possible. It's not conceivable. It's not safe for a pilot to hand fly an aircraft for 6 hours and to only be looking out the window and looking out the gauges, and your concentration will wane.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this relaxed concentration that is actually the safest way to fly, in that autopilot's on, they're engaged the whole time. Mm-hmm. Yes, they may be, you know, looking at something else, but they're engaged the whole time. And then in the moments where it is necessary to make a change, or we're landing, you know, something like that, then they have complete focus and they're not fatigued.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually that sort of loose concentration is, and loose focus is actually a very safe way to do what they do.
I wasn't being critical of pilots at all. I'm so impressed with what they do. And Bill Hoffman, your pilot, your captain, he's a pretty amazing guy. I'm guessing he's based on or a composite of some people you've known in real life.
You know, every single one of the characters is a complete fabrication of my imagination.
Uh-huh.
But the Bill is a very good representation of a lot of the characteristics of that are very common in pilots. He is duty bound. He is responsible. He is focused and driven. He is just, that is classic of pilots. Pilots are, they work very hard for a really, really long time to get those stripes on their shoulders and to be able to sit in that chair.
Uh-huh.
And they take that responsibility appropriately.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciated the way you set this up. I'm not going to give away any of the particulars about how this terrorist event occurs. It's so complicated. There's just so many elements to it, and you have so many twists and turns. Things happen quickly. You pivot. You get to the end of a chapter and you go, oh, whoa, and you got to go to the next page and find out what's going on. And you do a really good job of depicting these terrorists who are involved and letting us know, in a way, why they are doing what they are doing, and helping us understand what could make a person commit some acts like this. This is really impressive. I like the way you straddled the line on that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Because it had to be difficult. Because normally when you read a book like this, you read a book by Brad Thor or Vince Flynn, and it's on the one side, the patriots who are going to defeat the terrorists. There's nothing sympathetic about the portrayal of the bad guys.
Yeah, with this story, I worked very hard to portray an antagonist storyline that was emphatically not the stereotypical terrorist that we've seen so many times before.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to portray the opposite of that stereotype, because these antagonists do not represent America's enemies, but rather our friends. They are our trusted allies and people that we betrayed. And I purposely wanted to write the opposite of the stereotype that we've seen.
Well, you did well. And there's quite a story involved in just getting this book into print. It's your debut, and it's just a real thriller. I think this is going to be one of the big books of the summer. I think everybody's going to be reading this, whether they're on a plane or not, maybe just on the beach. And it's such a page-turner. And yet you had a real difficult time finding the right person to represent you to get this book out to the world, didn't you?
I really did, yeah. Once I had gotten the book, as far as I thought I could take it personally, I started looking for a literary agent, which if anybody doesn't know, like, you have to have a literary agent to break into the publishing industry unless you happen to know someone at, you know, a publisher, which I did not. I had no in. I literally bought a book called The Essential Guide to Getting Your Book Published, and I read it and followed the directions because I had no idea how to accomplish this. So, you know, in that process, you learn, well, you need an agent, so you have to query them, which means you send them this letter and sample pages and all of this. So I teach myself how to do this, and then I start submitting my query to agents, and I submitted to four different agents, all of whom said, no, thank you. So 41 rejections, and I submit my 42nd to an agency called The Story Factory, and my now current agent called and said, yeah, this is great. Let's do this.
And you took his call. You didn't hang up on him like Adrian did.
No, I didn't hang up on him. But
I'm just teasing you. I'm teasing you.
No, you're actually exactly right. Adrian and I, Adrian McKinty, author of The Chain, who is also represented by Shane Solario of The Story Factory, he hung up on Shane multiple times. Well, I took it one step further, and I didn't even take the call. I thought it was, because remember, I'm off of 41 rejections, so I'm not sitting by the phone waiting for it to ring. I am anticipating no's. So when he calls, I didn't get it. I declined the call because I thought it was, you know, an unidentified number. I thought it was like a robocall, you know, so I just didn't get it. Well, a couple days later, my phone rings again. I declined the call. It's just a robocall, right? And then something in the back of my mind goes, wait a second. Didn't I get another weird call like that, like a couple days ago, that was a similar zip code? Or area code. So then I look through my phone and I find a voicemail that I had missed from The Story Factory, to which, of course, then I'm freaking out because I've now, you know, I actually have someone calling me and I've essentially blocked their call multiple times. So then I start calling and calling and trying to get them on the phone and it's phone tag and I can't get them. So I'm thinking I've blown it. And at that time, I was also planning a backpacking trip with a friend of mine. So we were going to be in northern Arizona in, you know, the middle of nature with no cell service. And so I call and I leave a message and I say, hi, this is TJ. You know, I've been trying to get a hold of you. Just wanted to let you know I'm going on a backpacking trip. I won't have cell service for a week. If I don't hear from you tonight, I will I'll circle back, you know, when I come out of the woods. So I leave that call. I don't hear anything. And that night, my friend and I are leaving the restaurant, driving back to our hotel before we, you know, head out the next morning. And my phone rings. And it's that number. And so now, bear in mind, my friend has no idea that I've even written a book. She doesn't know anything about this. So I pull the car over, put it in park, and she's just looking around like, you know, dark woods. We just pulled over for no reason. Like, what is happening? And I look at her and I say, okay, this is going to be really weird, but I promise I'll explain everything in a minute, but I have to take this call. So then I answer the call. It's Shane. It's our first conversation. It goes incredibly well. He wants to see the complete manuscript. He's very interested in it. He loves what he's seen so far and wants to see the whole thing. It's great. I hang up the phone and my friend's just staring at me like, what was that?
Nice.
And I just look at her and I go, I don't know for sure, but I think there's a chance my whole life just changed. And it had.
And was that like a couple years ago?
That would have been fall of 2019. Shane and I started working together November of 2019.
And in the course of doing this and working with that agency, you've learned the same thing Adrian learned, and that is this. When you have Don Winslow in your corner, that's a good thing.
I got to tell you, he has been so supportive. All of the authors at the Story Factory have been unfathomably supportive, which has been just more than I could have ever hoped for, because this is exciting and it's incredible, but it's also frankly, very overwhelming, and it's really a lot. And I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never done this before. I'm every day I'm going, how do I do this? How do I do that? And so to have this entire agency of authors who have been where I've been, and to be able to talk to them and get their support, and to, it's been invaluable. And I don't know what I would have. I don't know how I would have made it through this journey without the support of Don Winslow and Adrienne McKenzie and Steve Hamilton and Dervla McTiernan. It's just, all of them have been amazing.
Yes, it's quite a team over there, and I really haven't seen anything like it in publishing. And I have never had Dervla on the show, but I've had Steve and Adrienne and Don and several others from the Story Factory, and wow, that's just a really wonderful story. I love that, TJ, and I'm guessing that there was a little bit of rewriting that went on. You thank some people at the end, some of these same writers, for kind of guiding you. What kind of stuff did they do to make you have a better book, to help you tighten it up or whatever?
Yeah, once I started working with Shane, we spent some time really making the book what it needed to be. The story, essentially, the story didn't change. Everything stayed the same. But what he did, and what the authors also, the like I mentioned in my acknowledgments, the Steve and Don and Adrienne and people who helped me, they showed me just how to do it better and how to make it cleaner and how to make it pop, and how they just took it to the next level. So while the story didn't change, they were just able to point out, like, look, it's great what we have, but this is the way to make it exceptional. And during that year, I felt like every day was just, I feel like I got my MFA in writing over the course of that year, just from working, you know, working, just trying things, and I'd send something to Shane and be like, great, now try this, and you know, make that adjustment, and this is too, you know. But I was just, I worked constantly, and it was an absolute education that I'll forever be grateful for.
Well, it sure does pop. It's Propulsive. It's Falling by T.J. Newman. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, your source for public service journalism and music discovery. It's the Book Nook. I'm Vic McKunis. I heard a rumor that there is some interest from Hollywood in this story.
You know, with it, so we made the announcement that there was a two-book deal with Simon & Schuster, and that went public. And within a week, we had a heated bidding war in Hollywood, with Universal Pictures winning the bidding war. So there's been a movie deal as well. And when I tell you that was one of the most surreal weeks of my life, I mean it. I'm used to rejection, and I'm used to, you know, just being here in my apartment on my own, just plunking away on my computer, and then to all of a sudden hear things like heated bidding war in Hollywood. It's incredible.
That is so cool. How's your life changed then since this all took place?
You know, it's funny because, I mean, everything has changed. I've quit my job as a flight attendant, and I mean, like, everything about my life has changed, you know, from the day-to-day of how I spend it to what I'm doing and where my life is headed. And at the same time, nothing's changed. It's still just, you know, we're still kind of, you know, slowly making our way out of the craziness that's been, you know, 2020 and the pandemic and everything that's happened. So we're all kind of, you know, I'm still just here in my apartment, just me, you know, just writing and working on things. It's just when I submit something that now kind of goes out to the whole world instead of, you know, just me or to Shane's inbox or something.
We haven't really talked at all about Bill Hoffman's family, and I just want to note that his wife, Carrie, and his son and daughter are also really important characters in this story, and just really powerfully depicted, and I'm not going to say anything more about them. We'll just let readers discover that. Did I hear you say Simon & Schuster gave you a two-book deal? Is that what I heard you say?
I did hear that correctly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean?
That means I get to do this again, which is just, I mean, just such an honor and so exciting. So I'm already well on my way and working on book two and making that happen. So that one I'm also playing pretty close to the chest, because I know the follow-up question will be, what can you tell us? Because I'm getting that question all the time. And, you know, in the same way that I didn't really tell anybody I was writing this book and working on this, I'm kind of doing the same with that one. I think it feels less scary and overwhelming if it's, you know, just me that knows what's going on and knows about this world. And I can sort of create and deal with it without the expectations and, you know, pressures from the outside world if it's just me and this, you know, world inside in my mind.
It never even occurred to me to ask you about the story you're working on. I never even crossed my mind. I'm just kidding. No, I know how that is. I know it's sensitive, and a lot of writers, it's almost like a superstition. You don't want to mess up what you're creating in your mind. You don't want to even think about it or talk about it. You just want to be there in your own mind working on this and totally alone.
In the same way, you know, when people are having a baby and they say, oh, we're thinking about the name this, and someone says, oh, I had a this in elementary school who was the bully in school. And it's like, well, great. Now I feel like we can't name it. You've just tainted the name. So, yeah, kind of like that, yeah.
Well, I do have one comment, and it's not going to spoil anything about the story, but there was one element of the story where I thought to myself, now this is absurd. This could never happen. You talk about a particular baseball team that's about ready to win the World Series, and I just thought, you know, there's no way. That could never happen. I'm just teasing you.
Well, maybe not this season, but, you know.
Right. Well, I know you're a baseball fan. We were chatting earlier. And
Yeah, I am. And I have to say, I've been to your park in Cincinnati, and it's beautiful. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous park to watch baseball on.
Well, I'm a former Red Sox fan, so I don't follow the National League. In fact, I really kind of stopped following baseball when I heard the Red Sox were a bunch of cheaters. But I was a longtime baseball fan for many, many years. I loved following baseball. It's the great sport of America, and someday I'm going to start rooting for a team again. I'm still trying to pick one. Maybe I'll start rooting for the Diamondbacks when they're good again.
Whew, get ready for some heartache.
Well,
it's tough as a Diamondbacks fan. It's a tough road to be a D-backs fan, but you know, that's what, if you're a Red Sox fan, you know, pre-2004, you already know that gig anyway.
That's true. And as the son of a diehard Chicago Cubs fan, I've seen a lot of suffering in my time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We're just glutton for punishment, I guess. That's what it is to be a fan. And yep.
So true. Well,
yeah.
This is so exciting. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about your debut novel, TJ.
Likewise, Vic. This was a really lovely conversation. Thank you so much for having me on, and I'm so glad you enjoyed Falling so much.
It's been a pleasure. The book is Falling by TJ Newman, just out, and I predict this is going to be one of the big reads this summer. You're going to see everybody reading this, but maybe not on an airplane. I'm kidding.
Hey, I wrote it on an airplane, so I feel like, I feel like it's the perfect pairing.
Okay.
But, you know, to each their own.
Okay. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO for The Book Nook. I'm Vic McKeonis.